Would you please stand for the reading of the scripture? From Matthew chapter 28, verses 1 to 10. After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descending from heaven came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothing white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, as he said. Come see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has been raised from the dead, and indeed he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. This is my message for you." So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came to him, took hold of his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." The word of the Lord.
A couple weeks ago, a group of us were down in Alabama on our spring pilgrimage, and we had carefully researched the restaurants where we wanted to eat. That was part of Jordan's responsibility. And so we had determined that when we got to Montgomery at the end of the day on Tuesday, we were going to eat at the K&J Rib Shack. And so as we're it's about 6 o'clock, and Jordan says, "I think I'm gonna call down there and just let him know there's a group of 13 of us so they could be ready for us." And so he called and he said, "Just let you know, there's a group of 13. We'll be there at 7. And then he looked at his phone and he says, "They hung up on me." Right after they said, "We're closed at 7. So we made adjustments. We went to a Mexican restaurant that night, but we were going to be in Montgomery for 2 days. And so we determined that the next night, on Wednesday, we were going to go back to K&J Rib Shack before they closed. So we got there about 6 o'clock or so, and the trouble is they'd had a big lunch run that day, and so when the group of us got there, they had no ribs left. So they did have a few other things, and they were also out of a lot of the other soul food that they were supposed to sell. And so sometimes that's just the way it goes. At the end of a long day, sometimes there just isn't much left. And as I was thinking about that event in Alabama, it really is too bad we didn't have Jesus with us, because I was thinking about that time that he was up in Galilee, and it was the end of the long day, and he'd been teaching, and whatever food people had brought with them, there were thousands in the crowd that day, and whatever food they had brought with them, they had already eaten it, and it got to be the end of the day, and the disciples said, "You know, they're getting hungry, we better send them into town." And Jesus said, "No, you feed them." And it turned out, at the end of that day, all they had left were 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread, which was even worse than the K&J Rib Shack. And yet Jesus, you know how that story goes. So, but Jesus wasn't with us on that trip, but I thought about that story. And for some reason, that story just, we did that also, I think, as a children's story in one of the services a couple weeks ago. And even though I'm supposed to be thinking this morning about the resurrection of Jesus, I just keep thinking about that story that took place on the shore of Galilee, where Jesus had these thousands of people, and it was the end of the day, and there wasn't much left, and yet by the power and the miracle of God, everybody left satisfied that day. I think about how many times that we face circumstances in our own lives where we go through something, and at the end of that period of time, there just isn't much left. In fact, there's almost nothing left. I think about people who go through struggles with cancer. And while some people are able to beat it, there are other people who, after a long struggle with cancer, there's just nothing left. Or I think about people who have Alzheimer's. And over a long period of time, there's just, at the end of the day, there's just nothing left, is there, at that particular point. Or somebody has a heart attack and the doctor comes out and says, I'm afraid to tell you that there's just not much of his heart left that's working. There are times we're just not left with much. Maybe it's diabetes, chronic lung afflictions, whatever. Sometimes it's a natural disaster that sweeps through an area, leaving death and destruction in its wake, and not much more. Tornadoes, floods, mudslides, pestilence, or plague. Sometimes it's an invading army, and we see in the news all the time, sometimes it's a cruel despot. Sometimes, at the end of the day, after we've been aging for a long time, or because we're subjected to racism, or nationalistic fervor, or misogyny, there are so many times we say, there's just nothing left. There's just nothing left. When loved ones go through tribulations and hell on earth, and we've tried for years to help them, we ourselves know the grief of what it's like trying to help someone we love, and there's just nothing left to offer. And so, I think so often of Jesus there at the Galilean shore at the end of that long day. When he looks out upon the crowds and he's happy that he's been able to teach them, but there still is a yearning, a deep yearning that he has to give them more. And yet, there's almost nothing left to work with. I think about how this is how Holy Week ended. You know, Holy Week started out so promising. Jesus riding into the city of Jerusalem with people waving palm branches and shouting about Him being the Messiah. And it looked like He had enormous support and excitement and joy from all the people. I think about how invigorating it would have been to have been in the temple that day and watch Jesus take on the money changers. I wished I had a front row seat for that event. And the kind of power and the kind of excitement as Jesus begins His reform of the temple. And yet, a week that started so promising, a week that seemed to offer so much, we all know what happens as Holy Week goes on. We know that by the end of that week, the world had not left Him with much, had it? They took away His freedom by arresting Him in the Garden of Gethsemane. They scared away His disciples by intimidating them. They stole the truth about Him by finding false witnesses who would swear to the gossip that was going around about Him. They gambled away even His clothes in a dice game to see who would get to own them next. And they confiscated His very life by hanging Him on a cross. By the end of Holy Week, there just wasn't much left, was there? We think back to Galilee on that day when there wasn't much left. And we see how on that occasion, Jesus took just the two fish and the five loaves, inadequate scraps certainly for, even for a crowd. We couldn't feed this group this morning on two fish and five loaves, much less the 5,000 that had gathered on the Galilean hillside that day. And yet Jesus took those scraps, inadequately as they were, and He lifted them skyward, and He thanked God for them, and then He began to share. By the power and miracle of God, we know on that day that even on a day when there's virtually nothing left over, that by the grace and power of God, new life, a new chapter, and a new story can yet emerge. In the light of the Easter story, we begin to reflect back on that story on the seashore that day. We know that from the Easter story and from the story on the multiplying of the loaves and fishes, that it may be that when we've been beaten down, when we've been discouraged, when we've been defeated time after time, when we have nothing left, it may just be that a power and a miracle of God could change our bleak future into a promising one. In the light of Easter, we need not be discouraged even though we look at the institutions and traditions that seem to be crumbling and dying around us, leaving in chaos, leaving us disconnected from one another, leaving us disoriented, powerless, nothing left but the malignancies of our political and religious institutions, nothing left but the oppressiveness of our traditions and customs. And in the light of Easter, we begin to see all of those negative predicaments in a new light, beginning to wonder whether a power and a miracle of God might change all the things that are discouraging and upsetting us into a promising future. In the light of Easter, we begin to see death in a new light. When we face death, and we do face death, we face death of all sorts, emotional death, death by a thousand nicks that we call aging, death of relationships, death of our financial well-being, and even the final ultimate death that comes when we have to call the funeral home. In the light of Easter, can we, when there is nothing left, call upon a power and a miracle of God to change our darkness into light, our mourning into laughter, our deaths, all of our deaths of every sort, into new life? And on this day, we suspect we can. When we first read about the multiplying of loaves and fishes on the Galilean hillside, we're delighted to see that God can take what is virtually nothing and turn it into an evening picnic for thousands. And on this Easter day, we began to wonder whether God can do even more than come up with an evening picnic. Can God take our deepest fears and tragedies, our utter emptiness and despair, and give us new days of life and joy and love and justice? That's what the story tells us. And that's what the songs assure us that we sing today. And we keep coming to church to hear over and over again God's power over death and darkness and sin and injustice. That's why we come to church. So we can hear the stories and sing the songs reminding us of a world beyond, a world that's better than the bad news that keeps battering us. And a church that's true to its calling makes sure that everybody who enters the doors of the holy place are able to hear again the message of resurrection that is central to all that we tell and sing and do. I think of the disciples on that first Easter morning. They woke that morning sure that they had nothing left. Their teacher and their spiritual father, Jesus, had been taken away from them. All they had left really was a memory. On that Sunday morning when the disciples woke up, to their knowledge, He was no longer a living presence, but only a memory. Now Jesus does indeed make for a nice memory. But the fact is, a memory is different from a living person. Any of us who've lost loved ones know that. We'd rather have the living person, wouldn't we? Jesus makes for a nice memory, but a memory can't heal our wounds and our sicknesses like the living Jesus. A memory can't cast out our demons. A memory doesn't forgive us for those sins that we committed yesterday. A memory doesn't speak words of challenge to us when we need some tough love. A memory doesn't calm today's storms or multiply the loaves and fishes for the overwhelming needs that often press in upon us. A memory doesn't raise our beloved dead. Memories don't do the things that living people do. So those followers of Jesus, they woke that Sunday morning thinking that all they had was a memory. All they knew was that they wanted to hang on to those stories of Jesus. And so they went to the tomb that morning bringing their spices and their ointments. There was so little left, just the corpse. They wanted to do what they could with what little was left. They went with their love and their memories and their thanksgivings for those memories. But when we stop and look at what Jesus did on the shore of Galilee, we get a glimpse of how God really works. Jesus took that day what little was left, gave God thanks, and then he set about loving the people who were before him. That's what he did that day. And that's what the woman did on that Easter morning. They took what little was left and they gave God thanks. And they planned to spend the day loving the people who were going to be around them. Now, I want to point out something that often gets overlooked, I think, in the Easter story. At least I'd never thought of it before. You know how at the crucifixion, the community just came apart? You know how when Jesus was arrested, the disciples, they scattered. They ran in all sorts of different directions. The community that Jesus had carefully gathered and nurtured for 3 years, it just, poof, came apart at the end of Holy Week. Do you remember how on Friday, when Jesus was being tried by the officials, how even Peter did not want to admit that he was a part of that community and he was going to be the new leader of it? But notice how the followers of Jesus, it's sort of like everybody, every man for himself. But notice what happens. And it starts happening at the cross itself. The people start coming back together. And you can see his family, and you can see the women that had followed him, and you can see even some of the disciples. And they start staying together again. They start caring for one another. We see the community beginning to come back together and to love one another, even at the cross. And by Sunday morning, they were back together again. They were talking with each other. They were processing what had happened. They didn't have much left, but they were taking what they had, which they thought would be only memories, and they were giving God thanks for those memories, and they were doing the best they could with what little they had to love one another, even in their blinding grief. And that's what Jesus does. He takes what little was left at the end of a long day of teaching. He gives thanks, and then he starts to love the people in the crowd. And what happens when Jesus just starts to love whoever's in front of him? There seems to be more and more fish and more loaves of bread, and the power of God. Power of God is amazing. On Easter day, God's grace and power bestowed on the disciples. And on Easter day, that same power continues to be bestowed on us. And it's not just an evening picnic on the shore of Galilee, but it is an eternity of church dinners and picnics and potlucks, hospitality centers. It's an eternity of communion celebrations. Food pantries, international famine relief operations, soup kitchens, Sunday dinners where church members invite each other to their homes to share a meal. On Easter day, God's grace and power is bestowed on the disciples to our own day, bestowed upon us as the living Christ who continues to heal and cast out our demons and forgive our sins and restore our relationships. And yes, raise our dead. I think the biggest challenge of every age for the church is to see Jesus as a living being and not as a memory. It's quite easy for us to think of Jesus as a past figure, a memory. We talk about his teachings. We talk about what he did and where he was. We're so accustomed to thinking that way about all who have died. They become memories rather than living beings. We make that adjustment, don't we, or we'll go crazy. We value the dead with our anecdotes, the lessons we learn from them, the pointers we've picked up. In this world, when we think of the dead, we don't think anymore of what they're doing. We think of what we have to do now. But Jesus, because of Easter, is not a memory. He is even more a living being who is with us. Probably the most difficult problem that we all have to deal with in our lives is the problem of death. At least it's the one problem that none of us are ever going to figure out how to avoid. And there are people sitting in this room this morning who've had brushes with death in the last year. And there are people sitting in this room this morning who have had to deal with the grief of loved ones, dear loved ones who have died. It's the most difficult thing any of us have to deal with. It hits us at the deepest level. And it is the living Christ. It is the power of God, it is the mercy of God that blesses us when there seems to be nothing left at the end of the day. That is exactly the time that God has the power and the love for us and the grace to bless us with life even beyond death. And so it is on this day that we sing our songs and we celebrate the living Christ who's among us.